Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today is a repeat visit by The Refinery. We spoke to him a few weeks ago. He is a blackjack player, carnival game player, and apparently also works with slots wherever he can find the edge. Refinery, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, guys.
What we forgot to ask you last time is, should any of our listeners want to get in touch with you for whatever reason, do you have an email address or somehow they can do it?
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody wants to email me, my email address is therefinerybj, as in blackjack, therefinerybj at gmail.com.
And also, are you still on the forums and the Discord and people can find you there?
I'm on the Discord. I might look at the forums here and there, but
not as much.
The Discord, that's, I actually really like that as an avenue for talking to people, because it allows them to easily contact you personally. You know, it really makes for a good way to interact with people.
You know what? Actually, now that we're talking about that, I got contacted recently, although this episode isn't going to air for 3 weeks or something, from somebody who wanted to get on the Discord. And apparently, the invitations had been shut down for a period of time because a lot of trolls had jumped onto the Discord channel. But that is back up. I don't know if the website is back up yet, but it is possible to get back on the Discord. But so maybe if the website is back up, we'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, and there's always just ask around. There's
if you know anybody
at all. Yeah. Rymo locks that down once in a while.
Very good. So you still play at your local casinos. So many APs have burned them out years ago, but you still play there. And once you actually led a mutiny at a blackjack table at your local casino, which seems to me one of the stupidest things that you could ever do. Now, what am I missing here?
Well, what you're missing, Bob, is that I thought that I was burned anyway, so I was ready to just really burn the whole thing down. You know, this is leading into the time where I took a pretty solid break from playing any table games at this particular place. But they'd had enough of me. You know, I could have done things a little bit smarter, maybe spread it out across different shifts in a different way or things like that. But, you know, again, the family aspect of it is, you know, kind of, and work just kind of gives me certain hours to be able to operate. But they got tired of me, and they had started to countermeasure, shuffle up on me, things like that. And I thought I'd found a pretty decent loophole to that, which in this case was making sure that I was at a full table when I was playing. And they were very, very reluctant for a while to shuffle up on me while the table was full. They didn't want to piss off all the other players. But eventually they got wise to that and just said, you know what, we're going to do it anyway.
Why didn't they just back you off?
Well, I think it's their policy that they, they'll do back offs. They don't generally trespass from this place. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's because I just keep showing up. They tell me they tell me I can't play blackjack. I just show up and play. I can always get a couple of shoes in, basically. So, you know, I just don't.
But they recognize
listen.
You.
Yeah. Well, you know,
casinos do weird things sometimes.
They really do. Yeah. Wear a hat, march in, throw it down. Then they see who's, you know, coloring up their chips at the end. The amount of eye rolling is kind of unbelievable. So I, you know, I have to just be careful. But you know, I've actually been able to recycle this place quite a bit. Some things changed there. It's kind of how it goes once in a while. And yeah, and I was able to recycle. I'll get back to that particular story in a second, but it's one of the things about this that makes it so challenging and interesting is that there's just no one answer to any of these questions. You never know exactly how these places are going to respond. I don't know exactly why I'm able to play there again, but I am. You know, and it's just about testing all of the boundaries. But in this particular case, it was a full table and they decided to shuffle. And let's see, what did I say? Something along the lines of, do all you fine gentlemen know why they're shuffling the cards? And I laid it out. I just laid it. I said, I mean, this is stupid, but it was fun too. And said, you know, hey, they're shuffling because you can win right now. And they were not happy. I mean, there was a lot of grousing.
But the players were not happy.
No one was really happy. I wasn't happy. Certainly, the floor wasn't happy.
Didn't want you saying that.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty fun watching the players actually, you know, get a clue for a few minutes and, you know, see what was going on. But yeah, not one of my finer moments, but.
Yeah, the problem with that is it makes you more memorable to the boss. Oh, absolutely.
But then I'm there a lot. I am still? I'm already still. Wow. Yeah, yeah, still. I will walk through and find you know, blackjack's a little bit tougher there, but I'll walk through. I mean, this is a few weeks ago or something, but I was walking through and I saw something very, very promising. And I said, you know what? I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm going to sit down and play this until they tell me stop it. And I got about 3 hours in at an excellent carnival.
Very good. Presumably with a dealer not following procedures.
Well, you know, the other interesting thing about that place, and this is my very first back off actually took place there, but there I went in and the counter catcher there comes up to me. I played a little bit. He comes up and he says, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And now, you know, back to there not being one correct response, right? Ordinarily anybody would say it's just grab your stuff and walk out. So, well, what really do I have to lose right now under these circumstances in listening to what he has to say? So we kind of walked off a little bit and had a little chat by the bar, right? This isn't a back rooming. This is, you know, hey, just come talk with me. And he told me something very surprising. He said, so I came in, I had an alert that said I needed to look into you. And of course, I was stupid, playing rated. This is very early on. And he says, now, look, I just got back from vacation and I don't give a shit about any of this stuff. So you're catching me on a good day and just do me a favor. Don't play this shift. Here's when I'm not here.
Wow.
And, you know, he says, look, I used to be an AP and I used to do this and that. And, you know, so like, just, you know, keep your maximum bets, this or whatever. And he gave me, you know, we shared some information and, you know, and that was actually very helpful. I think I listened to him for a little while and then I forgot what he told me, but you know, but again, is
you didn't forget what he told you. You just forgot what he told you.
Yeah, very conveniently I forgot what he told me.
So last time we did this show with Refinery, he told about a collusion game. After the show was over, Munchkin asked Refinery, well, what game was this? And it turned out that Munchkin and Refinery had played the same game with the same people at different times.
Not all the same people, but yeah, the organizer.
So they were talking about things. I was going, wow, that would, I bet we have lots of listeners who would like to know things about that. So what can you tell us? Like how, what kind of signals did you use in general? What did you try? What didn't work?
I would just say in my experience, this game required more transfer of information from more people than any other game that I've played. So it was an enormous amount of information that needed to be shared, and it needed to be shared by lots of different people. So that makes it extremely complicated. And the problem, well, there were a number of problems, but we ultimately determined that we were not going to be able to make money at the game because we just got immediate heat, even though it looked like there was a party going on this table, because there was lots of talking and laughing and interacting with the dealer because we needed time to transfer information. There were six people on the game that were of all different generations, from early 20s to 60s, of different races. So it did not look like these people were together and colluding at all.
I can figure out who the 60-year-old guy was.
Yeah, my father was on the game. But we just started getting immediate heat, even though we were betting. I mean, we were starting out small because, you know, we're trying to work this out. And I think the maximum bet on the game is $50 in this particular casino. And they just came over and started giving people heat, even though we were up just a few thousand dollars. And
a few thousand dollars split six ways.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I mean, at some point, they were making it so onerous on the players. It was clear they just did not want us playing. And this is common of casinos in Las Vegas, where people start winning and they just don't want the action at all. Because this had to look like what you would think they would love. A bunch of people drinking and having a good time. And yeah, they happen to be winning. But
right. Your table looks like it's an advertisement for what people are supposed to look like in Las Vegas.
Right.
And they don't want it.
And they don't want it. Yeah.
So. Yeah. And that was, you know, that was pretty much our experience, except one of the people of the six was really, really sick. He was very sick. So we have one guy at the table who really should have been home sleeping and instead was trying to suffer through a cold and do this play. And we actually went twice. And on the first night, we were doing okay. We were able to get everything down. It felt a little clunky, but we got the time in. Figured we'd change some things for the next day. Went back, and they were waiting, but they still didn't quite know what we were doing. So they knew something was up. They knew they didn't want us there. And a floor person came by to tell us, "You can't do that." And we said, "Well, do what?"
Right.
And they said, "Well, you can't hold the cards." Well, then how can I play the game if I can't hold the cards? Don't I need to see my cards? And they actually couldn't articulate what it was exactly that they wanted us to stop doing. But it was very clear that the play was over.
Yeah, they just didn't want it. Yeah, with us, they kept coming up and going, "You can't show each other your cards." And we were like, "We're not." Nobody was showing each other their cards.
Right.
But they posted two pit bosses on the game, you know, with their arms folded, glaring at us. And I mean, I have to say, there were two guys on the game that were really hilarious, that just were nonstop talking, and everybody was laughing, including the dealer, you know. And yeah, they had no idea what we were doing. They just knew, oh, somebody's winning. Now, I have to say, I was on another game that was a game where you're sharing information. that had a lot less information to share. And it really was going very smoothly. I mean, just, and again, all races, all ages on the table, multiple countries represented. And, you know, we won a lot of money the first night. And this was a brand new game. It was being field tested. And we won a lot of money the first night. And the second night, they came and they backed off the couple that were betting the money. And, you know, the guy said, "Are we doing something wrong?" And he's like, "No, no." He said, "You know, this is just, it's a new game and we really don't understand it. And you've won too much money, so you can play anything else, just not this game." And then they closed the table and the game disappeared. So it didn't make it through the field test.
When you have six players on a game, and those exact same six players show up again the next day, isn't that kind of a clue that you're together?
Sometimes it could be, but not on a busy weekend. Because, for example, on this game, right, it's a brand new game. Nobody knows how to play it. And so the players, yeah, they did not put us together at all. Definitely, they didn't put us together.
Yeah, in my specific case, you know, this was the first team play that I'd ever done. So, you know, aside from some really basic stuff, which is, you know, I guess I would say, you know, I've done other plays where I was benefiting from information or, you know, helping out, you know, however, but this was the first one where there was this a major information sharing that was essential to how the whole thing worked. And the reality of how long it actually took, what the optics are of the entire thing, very, very different in practice than in the reality. Because when we were, you know, when we were practicing the game, or when I would kind of map out what I thought this looked like, I definitely didn't appreciate what it looks like when there's six people and you're waiting for something and then everyone pushes their bet out at the same time, you know, those types of things, that it's very, very noticeable.
Yeah. So. Yeah. See, that's the other, that part has to be worked on as well. Not just the communication, but how to make it look right. That game, for me, I just don't think that's a game that's practical unless you have communication equipment. And then it's a great game for that, because but you need to be in a jurisdiction that where computers aren't illegal. So, although it wouldn't even have to be computers, it would just have to be communication equipment. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think there's... I mean, I was very excited about it, and then I left that play very little down, saying, "Oh man, that's never going to happen." And then, you know, then I thought about the same communication computer aspect of it, and I don't know, maybe there's still hope.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when there's an empty table, and you want all six seats, and you have six players there, how long does it take you to fill up the table? Do you, six strangers come up at exactly the same time? Or first there's two, and then there's one more, and then there's one more. How do you do that?
So in this case, and so I don't know how other people do it. What we did is we got them to open a table for us. Well, they opened another table, and
so you guys were acting like you were all together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure how well that would work. Trying to, I mean, it worked out for you. You know, maybe you had more experience in that in general. But it seemed like it would go better if we're just a fun crowd here trying to play this game, right? But we did have to kind of chase one guy off the table. I took that responsibility on, and I was as annoying as I could possibly be. Just trying to get him to go, and eventually he moved tables. But yeah, that wasn't very fun. trying to get the guy to move, but we were there to play that game. Right. And I was saying, you know, I mean, I felt the pressure of, okay, if we can't even get on a table, then I flew somewhere and did all of this, and I took 4 days away to do this, and I'm not even going to get to play.
Yeah, but even if you didn't get to play, just the fact that you were involved with the group of people that you were involved with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Has long-term benefits. In my case, the bad play that I mentioned, I mean, the thing about both these games that I was talking about is they were not popular. So the one that was brand new, nobody was playing it because nobody knew how. And so we did stagger it. You know, one of the players got there an hour before the others. And then we just staggered in, you know, until we eventually filled up the table. And I don't think we ever had a civilian land on the game. And or if they did, they did not play very long because they just didn't understand the game. So,
yeah, I think our idea was to get the play working, get comfortable with it, and then repeat it another time using different types of logistics like that, showing up at different times, or, you know, really just change whatever aspects we thought would be beneficial. But at that point, now we all just kind of showed up at the same time, and not optimal, but for what we were doing, it actually wasn't a big deal.
We could probably do an entire episode of stories of how to get people off of games.
I'm sure we could. The next time we have a Bob and Richard answers their mail, I promise our audience that will be a question from me.
Oh, well, but that's only Richard. My stories. I mean, you know, what we need is a round table of guys who...
I feel bad. I like to apologize to that guy. I wasn't, you know, I was really annoying.
Oh, well, good. You want to describe what you look like that day? So make sure he knows what you were. Have you ever invested in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies?
Yeah. I have been very fortunate in that I was onto Bitcoin pretty early on. I wasn't one of the people that bought, you know, 100 and put it aside or anything like that. I mean, I never really, at the time that I got involved with it, I didn't really grasp the potential of cryptocurrency in general and, you know, just all of that. I understood the technology and I understood some of the more groundbreaking parts of what was being done. But in a macro view, I wasn't able to step back and say, you know, it's $90 right now. Why don't I just go ahead and buy 50? Just buy 50 and just don't touch it, right? So, you know, I tried a few different things. I tried trading it. You know, again, this is very early on, stuff like that. You know, but at one point I was able to, you know, to make a little bit of money on crypto. But then I got out of it entirely. I don't hold any crypto right now except for a tiny, tiny bit, like in the hundreds of dollars, in order to settle small debts and things like that with people like Vagabond. And the primary reason that I got out is I think that the entirety of the crypto markets are a fraud. There is a lot of exposure in the crypto markets to bad actors, to bad exchanges, to something called Tether, which is basically a mechanism that's been used to pump money into the crypto markets. And no one wants to hear it because people are making tons of money with this. You have your true believers. It's tantamount to religion. But I really think there is a crypto reckoning coming. And at the very least, people should be aware that it is not all sunshine and rainbows, you know, and that there's a lot of exposure, especially with this thing Tether. They've been printing money that supposedly is backed. We can talk about that. But basically, that money has gone into the crypto markets. And I'll ask you guys, what do you think they do with it when it's in the crypto markets? Buy crypto.
Right.
Oh, okay. So you take all of this money, this fake money, you print it all, you throw it into a crypto market where the only thing people can do with it is buy crypto. They can't exchange it for money. You can't exchange it for dollars. You can exchange it for crypto that you sell to get money out.
How do you get the Tether?
You purchase it at an exchange.
Oh, so you have to pay for it.
So you pay for it. Okay. But it is printed by the Tether company in, and it's has a relationship with the exchange Bitfinex. Uh-huh. And basically, the concept is it's a stable coin. It's pegged one-to-one to the U.S. dollar. And originally, they said that every Tether was backed one-to-one with a U.S. dollar in the bank somewhere, with an actual dollar. They changed that at some point when nobody can verify that this actually is real, right? And they changed that to, well, it's backed by hard currency and cryptocurrency, okay? But if it's backed by cryptocurrency, then it's not backed by anything because it's backed by the crypto that's being purchased with the Tether.
Right, yeah.
So this is something that it's eventually all going to shake out. I don't know when. I think eventually I'll be proven right on this. I don't really care. I don't hold any crypto. But there's a lot of zealots. And I think it's worth knowing that there's another position of this, which is
it's a bubble.
It's a bubble. It's a bubble, but it's worse than that because you have this Tether contagion. They're able to flood the markets with all of this printed money. It's no different than QE or the Fed printing money, right? They print this money, and all of these exchanges, they don't have any safeguards in place to stop self-dealing, to stop wash trading and things like that. So people are able to, with massive leverage, purchase Bitcoin or whatever crypto from themselves, walking the price up, and they're able to do this with massive amounts of leverage. So a lot of people think, well, the increase in Tether couldn't actually cause the price to go up so high. It's just not enough Tether in relationship to the market cap of the crypto.
All right. I don't want to get weeds on cryptocurrencies. So.
All right. Yeah. So since
all right. So just be careful. That's all.
Yeah.
So since Richard feels that way, we're going to take a commercial break. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In March, the promotion is for players who already get mailers with Free Play, and it's called Free Play with a Kicker. Pick up your usual mailer on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and if you do so, you'll receive the same amount on Friday or Saturday of the same week. Pick up all 8 of these, and on Monday, March 30th, you get a double Free Play amount. Instead of 4 times mailer pickups, you will have 9 times with the total value of 10 times your mailer amount. The classes are over. We're likely starting the classes again shortly after Labor Day in September. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. There are a number of different bets on whether Biden and or will indeed be the nominee, who will win the general election, who will win various senatorial contests, who will take control of the Senate and the House, as well as other bets around the world. Political junkies can get into this. It's actually quite fascinating. These are small bets, but Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predictit.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. BlackjackApprenticeship.com is an excellent site for those of you who wish to be successful at counting cards at blackjack. They have a variety of training programs. Colin Jones posts a number of free videos on YouTube where you can check out if his teaching style works for you. His most recent is a response to Dr. Elliot Jacobson's 7 Reasons Why You Should Never Count Cards. Colin grades each of Jacobson's reasons on the 0 to 10 BS to truth meter. Spoiler alert, Jacobson's arguments don't hold up very well. The next boot camp, May 30th to 31st. It was announced shortly before the coronavirus situation started closing a number of Las Vegas gatherings. Whether it will have passed by the end of May is an open question. Everybody is monitoring. As of now, the boot camp is still on, and it still presents a very good value for aspiring card counters. Whether it closes or not could be changed at any moment. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Triple Play Dream Card. Dream Card is a 10 coins per line game where periodically receive a dream card, which is substituted for the best available card before the draw. There is no special strategy required, and the feature adds EV over whatever the base game plays. There are actually 2 versions of Dream Card out there. Neither one affects the strategy. The EV is approximately the same, but they reach that EV differently. In the newer version, when you dealt a free card, there are actually 3 of them dealt in the background, and the machine picks the one that is best for you. But you don't get them as often. In the older version, you get just one, and it happens more frequently. The EV doesn't change, but the frequency of Dream Card does. This is one of the very few games where the physical game actually changed when they kept the same name. Usually when they change the name on video poker, when they change the game, they change the name, like calling it Dream Card Deluxe or something like that. All right, we are back with Refinery. Automatic shufflers, cheating players. Do you have any thought about that?
Yeah, so this is a fun one because aside from whether or not it's possible to... So the concept is that there are certain compositions of decks of cards playing blackjack that will cause the player to not... to have a much worse edge. In fact, they can think that they have an edge because the count is high, but the composition of the cards is such that that they lose and lose and lose.
So, for example,
there's more middle cards that are coming out, 7, 8, 9s. You're not the cards are stacked in an order that's basically never going to. To resort, it's card clumping is the concept. So you have all these mid cards.
But it's not just a subset. They have to be stacked in an order. You're talking about
Not so much in order, but just grouped together.
Okay, but so let's say you had a group of 20 cards that were a lot of 7s, 8s, and 9s, and a bunch of 10s and aces.
Right.
That would be an extreme example.
Yeah.
And you're saying that would be a big disadvantage to the player?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the concept is that that's a disadvantage to the player. Now, whether that is or not, I think Stanford Wong wrote about it. There's different theories on whether or not that is actually something that happens. But there's a conspiracy theory out there that people think that automatic shufflers can be programmed to stack the cards in these particular orders that are detrimental to the player, right?
Yeah.
So that's okay. That's the part that I find interesting, right?
Really? Why? I mean, why do you think that this would be a possibility?
There's a lot of conspiracy theories. Well, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, so it's interesting, and I mean, this is really out there. A lot of people think that this is going on, and that casinos are using this to cheat. In fact, they've given it a name, and they say that the automatic shufflers have a mode on them called Beast Mode. This is true. This is something that people believe. People actually believe this. And I'm talking at like real advantage players that, you know, or professional blackjack players are out there, and they think that these machines can do this.
In the United States.
In the United States. Wow. Yeah. And that they're being cheated by this type of thing. I think it's ridiculous on its face. It gained some steam. Elliot Jacobson made a video explaining why he doesn't think that this is possible. But I had another approach to this, because I'll even say that, let's say the machines themselves are capable of ordering the cards in this particular way. Let's even say that they're able to do that. So the reason that you would ever put something like that in place, let's say your Shuffle Master, would be to sell it, right? To sell that feature.
So you have to advertise
it. You either have to advertise it, or, you know, I've been a sales engineer, right? The technical person that goes out to explain how these things work, right? So someone is going out to a casino and they're selling their Shuffle Master to the casino, and
with Beast Mode,
and they're saying, hey, you know, we've got this thing. If we push the button, then it's going to make it it's going to really mess up card counters.
But the other problem is, what's in it for Shuffle Master? They have a monopoly already. Like, suddenly a casino is going to say, oh, okay, well, we already have your product. I mean, the whole thing just doesn't make any sense. And I think really what this boils down to is people just really do not understand randomness. They think when they lose, it must be because someone's cheating. One of the most respected blackjack writers in the world back in the 70s and 80s was Lance Humble, who came up with the High Up 1 or 2. And his books are full of, they're cheating. You know, everybody's cheating me. And even he, I think, just couldn't wrap his head around what random looks like.
Right. So, and it can go on for so much longer than anybody realizes. The downswings and things like that.
Yeah.
I've had it in different aspects. Thankfully, I've never had one of those really terrible losing streaks. But it is kind of unbelievable that, I mean, I think everybody has gone through it. I went through it early on, where I thought, okay, this is, this just doesn't seem normal. But
we don't know what normal
is. We don't know what it is. And the feeling of it, you know, has to be removed. I thought that was, I don't know, just given my background, I don't know how anybody could go and sell these shuffle machines with this mode and keep it a secret, but you also have to tell people?
Yeah, right. And you know, the gaming control board gets a copy of the source code.
Well,
right?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because that's something that I figured was the case, that there's a source escrow.
Yeah.
All right. And I mean, that alone, those types of things should be enough to say, I mean, I prefer them in general because, you know, makes for a faster game. But, you know, it's very interesting that a lot of people think they're being cheated by these things.
Yeah.
But,
first of all, I hear these things from people I consider meatballs. I didn't know that there were people that were professionals who thought this. So
we have a conspiracy theory. All three of us think it's a bunch of bunk. Let's move on.
Yeah, right. I agree.
How much drinking do you do while you're at the table?
Previously, a lot, and now zero, actually.
So we had a guest a couple of times named Rome's who talked a lot about drinking at the table. And I was always very skeptical. But so now why do you no longer do it?
Well, I've stopped drinking for the most part just as a general part of my life. You know, I've pretty much stopped drinking. But it is definitely something that I've thought a lot about in terms of drinking for cover. I see a lot of people talking about drinking for cover. And it's one of the things that I just thought was so great about what James Grosjean wrote about this in one of his books, that if you're drinking for cover, you're a drinker. And it's interesting. I think there's a lot of people that are out there that are drinking for cover, but really they're just drinking at the table. And, you know, I'm not even really concerned about it, you know, how it affects play. Mm-hmm. I've had people count me down, similar to, you know, the story Rome's told. I've had people count me down while I was drinking a lot, and I, you know, did just fine. But I find a lot of faulty logic in the idea that anybody really cares. It's like I hear people say, well, I said this at the table and that's going to give me cover. Yeah. Nobody cares. Nobody's really watching.
And the guy in surveillance can't hear you.
And the guy in surveillance can't hear you. And I guess at a certain point, if you're so drunk you can hardly stand, then maybe, maybe that's cover. But, you know, I think it just – a lot of it is just being very clear about what your objectives are and what you're actually doing. And nothing wrong with having a drink or whatever you'd like, but –
Yeah, what little it might buy you is it may buy you a little extra time of the pit boss calling surveillance. Now, that doesn't mean surveillance may not watch you on their own, but some of that is generated from a boss calling surveillance and saying, look at this guy. So in some cases, maybe that gets delayed by some amount of time because of drinking. But yeah, I think for the most part, people are fooling themselves about how much it buys them.
Yeah.
In the old days, when it was the pit boss who decided whether you were a card counter or not, well, then it could buy you something. But now that it's surveillance, I just don't think it buys you anything, really.
You ever play at Hooters?
Yeah. Well, this was a fun time. This is actually when I was just getting started, came back to Vegas with a friend of mine, and we were calling each other into counts, and we were kind of playing as a team, kind of not. Again, still didn't know what I was doing. Still don't quite feel like I know what I'm doing all the time, but you know, at that time it was very, very new. And playing what at the time was a really, really excellent game at Hooters. And, you know, people wondered, like, what are the tells that tell you that, you know, this person's a card counter? Being in Hooters and pulling out thousands of dollars one right after the other as you lose hand after hand, that's a pretty big tell, right? So we just lost and lost and lost and had to keep digging into the pockets. And, the floor came over and the phones are ringing. And this is the first time that I ever realized this is what heat is. It was a guy on the phone and he's pointing animatedly to every single table that we played at. And he's saying, and they played there and they played there and they, and just, I mean, this was so, so obvious. So we just, you know, grabbed everything up and hit the door. But, you know, I see a lot of people, saying, I think I'm getting heat. This guy came over and he asked how I was doing today.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, there's again, Grosjean said something like, your wife standing behind you is heat. Right. So it's knowing the difference between when it's real heat or not, you know, is kind of a skill that you have to develop. I generally take the approach of just playing until they make it clear they don't want me there.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good thing in Collins' book, 21st Century Card Counter, where he said, don't bar yourself, right? Because, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times we see some guy, you know, come into the pit from somewhere else, and the pit boss starts looking at us and talking to the guy, and then it turns out it's a host. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But Colin told that great story about, I mean, he sounded sick about it, that, you know, he didn't know how much money they left on the table by leaving one of those locations that they could have just kept playing at.
And a location that they had no plans to ever go back to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So Richard has mentioned numerous times that a big problem area for winning players is cashing your chips at the cage. Have you had any experience, negative experience in this kind of thing?
I mean, I've generally been pretty fortunate in this regard. This is one of the areas that people can really, really help you out with when you know some other advantage players. So whether you're exchanging chips with them, you know, that's obviously a big help. But also, all of these places generally have their own tolerances to what they will or won't cash out. So that's something that where the networking has just been so super important to be able to ask this person, hey, I'm headed here. What's the situation at the cage? Okay. Anything under $500, you're fine. Right. You know, whatever that number is. Sometimes I've gone up and this happened recently, actually in Atlantic City. And I really just wanted to be done with that place. So I think I cashed about $4,000 or $5,000 out at once. Walked up and they said, yeah, we need your player's card. I said, no. They said, we need your ID then. I said, that's not happening either. And no one said anything. And they made calls and we looked at each other and eventually they just cashed it. So, you know, I think it's easy to try to make a bunch of excuses or whatever, but a lot of times just staring the people down and saying, yeah, you're not getting those things. I have, especially if it's not, we're not talking CTR right. amounts, right? Yeah. We're talking just, you know, look, I have a right to play here. I didn't do anything wrong. You know, what are we going to do? Call gaming? Just cash it out. So, I mean, that's been my approach is, I mean, with a lot of these things, it's just having a certain amount of confidence walking up there saying, I'm here for a reason. It's to cash these chips out. And you're going to cash them out, please. Thank you.
Yep. Some places are better than others. It just depends on the...
Yeah. Yeah.
So in some places, they've already have the chips. And then you have the conversation. And they say, well, we won't give them back if you don't do this.
Yeah, that happens too.
Yeah, I've been fortunate in that regard and, you know, just trying to be, I mean, any time I go to a new city, a new place, I put that state's gaming phone number on my favorites. So if I need to call gaming, I don't have to look up a number. And thankfully, I haven't really had to do that.
So have you ever been hole carding and had somebody else at the table also hole carding?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to mention is that the dealers that I've seen in the different places that I go, they can be really creative in just how differently and how badly they make mistakes to expose, right, Richard?
Yes.
So you never quite know. So it's not always going to be the same. So, you know, it just kind of goes back to how to approach the different problems and being in what I've been trying to do is think like an advantage player, look for the different opportunities and just keep my mind open to all the different ways that these things can go. And I had a situation where the dealer was, you know, was making her mistake in a way that was very, very unique. And there was another guy at that same place who I knew, who was a hole carder, and he couldn't figure out why I was even playing this game. And I'm not sure, he mentioned, I don't think I ever told him. But it was just a very unique place. And it just goes back to keeping your mind open to the different opportunities. I mean, this isn't something that it shouldn't have worked like this, but you know, it's it was just a great opportunity, and no one really saw what was going on. So that was a lot of fun.
How many unique ways can there be?
Well, you know, people get fixated on a certain idea about where you can see the whole card. So, I mean, I remember one time, often on a pitch game, you know, you will see it over at third base. But I actually had a game one time where I could see it from first base, which is really unusual because of the way they deal. But this particular dealer would just kind of tilt the card up toward first before bringing it down and sliding it under the hole card. So if you don't open your mind to the fact that you could see it from over there, you have a blind spot. So,
yeah. And it all comes down to seeing it that first time, honestly. And that was life changing.
Yeah.
Because I still don't know if I would I still be looking and not seeing it. I don't know. But once I saw it, then it really helped me understand, okay, now I know what I'm looking for.
At the recent blackjack ball, James Grosjean cut 1-inch squares out of the center of all the face cards of a deck, put magnets on them and put them on the board. And you had to identify which one was a king of spades, which one was a queen of hearts, which one was a jack of clubs, etc. Because sometimes the middle of the card is all you see. And player who actually ended up winning, Arnold Snyder, did amazingly well at that. Did not know Arnold was an active player or had eyes good enough to see this anymore. Arnold's not a young man, younger than me, but not a young man. And he ended up acing this, which was, of course, those of us who know he's a pro and he's been doing this a long time, it wasn't that much surprising. But I figured it would have been one of the younger kids who going to be much better at that. All right. We've been talking to the Refinery for the second time. Thank you. It's very interesting. Bring different stuff to the table than most of our other guests have. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you guys for having me.
Okay, Richard, we are now at the part of the show where we offer our recommendations. Do you have something for our audience?
Yeah, so, well, what I'm reading right now is Gambling Sleight of Hand, 40 Years of Research by Steve Forte. I mentioned this on a show a month ago that I was eager to see it because it was getting delivered, and now I've got it, and I'm digging into it. It's just an amazing book. For people who are interested in gambling sleight of hand or magic that involves gambling moves, this book will be the reference that people cite probably for 100 years, would be my guess. So that's excellent. I mean, it weighs like 30 pounds or something and costs $300, but to me, it's well worth it. And let's see, what I'm watching right now is Better Call Saul, which if you like Breaking Bad, it's the sequel. It's on Netflix, so been enjoying that too. Refinery, you have a recommendation?
Yeah, so this might be something that any of the traveling APs, people spending a lot of time in their cars, maybe listen to some podcasts. I found an amazing podcast recently. This is one of the best that I've ever listened to. It is called Monster DC Sniper. And there have actually been three monster series. This is the first one that I'm listening to. The others are on Zodiac, and there's one other. But this one is 15 episodes just on the 2001, 2002 DC Sniper killings, and it is phenomenal. It's like being there. So definitely recommend that. It's when I got to the end of it, it's at episode 10. I was actually disappointed that I have to wait every week for the new one to come out, because it's phenomenal.
Well, but if you're in the first season of it,
I skipped. I just went straight to the DC Sniper one.
Oh, that's the latest.
That's the latest one. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
So you should have started with one of the others, and then you could binge it.
That's right. Well, I'll go back to those. It's truly amazing, though.
Yeah, I will check that out.
Good. And I have a question for Richard about his recommendation. So, Richard, you have largely retired multiple times. But this time you're actually saying, I really, 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 really mean it this time. So spending $300 on how to see if a dealer has sleight of hand. So this sounds like it is something that you're doing as a avocation and not as a vocation. You're not expecting really to make money off this information. You just have this history of gambling and magic, and you just kind of find it fascinating. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, magic is the other part of it. So when I did magic, I was mostly into card magic, and so this book is just amazing in that regard. So for 100 years, card magicians went to a book called Expert at the Card Table by Erdnase, and you know, a lot of the people involved in gambling sleights always were not very impressed by that book. And now that this book is out, I think, you know, 20 years from now, people will have forgotten about Erdnase, and it'll be that used to be a book a long time ago that people looked at. But I would liken this book to James Grosjean's book, Exhibit CAA, that was sort of a game changer for advantage players. I think this is a game changer for
magicians,
card magicians, well, and for card mechanics, if they're still out there. You know, I don't think there are a lot of card mechanics out there anymore, because I think it's sort of a dying thing.
Very good. Thank you, Refinery. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.